Hey y'all, it's Stephanie from Root to Seed. First, I want to say Happy Mother's Day to my mother and all of the mothers out there. I hope you have a very special day. Today, we will be discussing insect pests in our first of a two-part series. In this part, I will discuss basic ways to deal with pests in general, and in the second part, I will go into more detail about specific insects in our area. First, however, I'd like to share our news. We are gearing up for the very popular seedling sale, so keep your ears open and it will likely start next weekend and it will be a delivery or pickup item. We also did a taste testing for our raspberry jam and decided that we would match dill with raspberry this year for a raspberry dill jam. And this weekend, we will be planting out many of our hardy summer vegetables. Okay, let's get to the bugs. The good news is over 97% of the insects you might find in a grassy area are beneficial or simply innocent bystanders. They perform, for free of charge, such essential services as pest control, pollination, and soil aeration. They keep things tidy by removing and recycling nutrients found in dead material from both plants and animals. These beneficial insects, as well as other arthropods, fungi, nematodes, bacteria, and even slugs, are essential to your local ecosystem. So when managing a pest outbreak, remember to protect your many existing beneficial creatures by avoiding the broadcasting of pesticides, including organic ones, whenever possible. Even plants and animals that are considered pests can be beneficial in certain conditions, and it's only when their numbers get out of hand that they become pests. Consider the carpenter ant, who's a major nutrient recycler in the natural environment but can cause damage to your house if the queen chooses to make a nest there. Many times the number that is too many depends simply on your perspective or comfort level and not on a fundamental problem with our landscape. If you feel you have a pest problem, don't panic. Follow some simple steps to resolve the issue. I'll be back in a few seconds to talk about integrated pest management and pesticides. Integrated pest management, or IPM, is a way of managing pests with the least harmful effect to people, pets, and the environment. In an IPM approach, considerable effort is put toward preventing pest problems by controlling conditions and practices that may attract and support pests. Management of pests begins with a five-step process. Step one is to identify the pest. Step two is to learn about the pest's biology. Number three is to determine your tolerance level. Number four is to modify the habitat to deter the pest. And number five is to monitor pest abundance and damage, if any. Many times, a pest is not present in numbers high enough to warrant control. Other times, a natural control, such as a predator, may be present, preventing serious damage without requiring intervention. You do not need to initiate a pest control measure unless pest numbers exceeds economic, aesthetic, or management thresholds. If control is warranted, oftentimes you can get rid of the immediate pest problems with simple hand picking, vacuuming, water sprays, traps, exclusion, or pruning. Only if the pest remains above tolerance levels after these steps have been followed is chemical control to be considered. Since pesticides can kill beneficial and non-target life forms, it's very important to first accurately identify the pest, know its life cycle, understand how it damages the plant, and determine your tolerance thresholds. As long as a long-term response, cultural methods such as planting different varieties, improving air circulation, addressing drainage problems, installing barriers, or amending the soil based on a soil test should be implemented to prevent future pest outbreaks. By using your knowledge of the pest, plant, and the local ecosystem, of the natural enemies that limit pest populations, and of the biological and cultural methods that can be used to prevent conditions favorable to disease, you can foster an ecosystem in which pest outbreaks are uncommon. Now let's move to pesticides. The federal government defines pesticides as any substance, natural, organic, or synthetic, that kills, repels, or mitigates any pest. This includes insecticides, herbicides, fungicides, rodenticides, and microbicides, and so on. Before applying any pesticide, read, understand, and follow all the label instructions and warnings. For pesticides, the label is the law. If the label has an EPA pesticide registration number on it, then it is a pesticide and you must follow the directions on the table for use and disposal. An increasing number of pest management products that are classified as minimal risk pesticides and are thus exempt from the EPA registration have come into the market in recent years. These are often referred to as 25B pesticides after the section of the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act that created the exemption from the registration that are all active and inert ingredients are on the respective EPA list of materials considered to be safe for the intended use. Organic pesticides are generally non-synthetic, and the few exceptions use only synthetic ingredients allowed under the USDA National Organic Program. Organic, though, does not mean non-toxic, and there are two organic pesticide ingredients currently available on the market that are of concern. The first one is Rodin-1, which is associated with Parkinson's disease. The second is pyrethrum, which has been classified as a carcinogen and banned from school grounds in Massachusetts. Pyrethrins are organic insecticidal compounds derived from the plant extract pyrethrum. If you're choosing an organic pesticide, remember to maximize effectiveness of the material so the amount and the number of applications can be kept to a minimum. For example, if you're using bait to eliminate an ant nest, it's preferable to spraying them. Using biological agents called biopesticides for control of pests can be effective and much less hazardous to the environment than using organic chemical pesticides. If the biological control agent is carefully chosen and its use is well tested, for example, products derived from the bacterium Bacillus thuringiensis, I don't expect you to remember that, we commonly refer to it as BT. This bacterium are proteins that have specific binding to the gut of particular groups of insects. So products from BT are effective in controlling caterpillars, for example, but have very little effect on flying insect groups, other non-target creatures, or on human health. One quick break before my final thoughts. I hope this short episode was helpful. Be sure to tune in next week for part two. We'll be talking about insects that are common to our area. And if you need to refer to a resource about insects, you can visit our community blog. Two blogs that are in there that I can think of will be a helpful resource for you is Insect Repelling Plants and Bugs Are Our Friends. And I'll leave the links in the show notes. In the meantime, if you're liking the podcast, do be sure to subscribe and give us a review. It really does help us bring you quality content. And until next time, be kind to the planet, be kind to each other, and join our community.